Hi, my name is Kirk Kinder, and this is Saving Yourself from Wall Street, the podcast for people who want to avoid Wall Street's sales tactics, high cost, and conflicted advice so they can take control of their financial life. So let's get to it. Getting into and paying for college is one of the biggest stressors for kids and parents today. If you're a parent who has a child approaching college, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And even worse, overpaying for school can have a material impact on the parent's retirement plan, as well as the start of the student's financial life. There's nothing worse than a student starting off with a massive amount of college debt that's going to have an impact on them for years to come. Today's guest helps students and parents bring order to the college chaos. Andy Lockwood, owner of Lockwood College Prep, has two best-selling books on the college planning topics: How to Pay Wholesale for College and The Incomparable Applicant. Andy found his way into the college planning industry after a stint as a corporate lawyer and after amassing over $100,000 of college debt himself from his undergraduate studies at Wesleyan University and St. John's University School of Law. Now Andy, along with his wife Pearl, helps students and parents navigate these treacherous waters while simultaneously bringing down their stress levels with humor and sarcasm and a little bit of the truth. If you have children approaching college, you're going to love today's interview. Well, thanks, Andy. I appreciate you coming on the podcast.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I enjoyed the singing and guitar playing you were doing when I was on hold. That was great. Very talented. Well,
yeah, I do my best. The first thing, you know, what you deal with, you know, college planning for folks is so important, especially with the cost of college rising so rapidly over the past decade. How did a Long Island guy who was, you know, playing hoops at Wesleyan in college and went to law school, how did you end up being a college counselor?
I practiced law for 5 years, and the last couple of those years I was in-house counsel to a publicly traded brokerage in Miami, Florida. And this was in the late 90s, so in 99 we got sold twice, and the first time was great, the second time was a couple months later, and I knew that was not going to be a good fit for me. So either I had to be proactive and leave, or they were going to, you know, make me leave. So I'd always sort of wanted to be self-employed, so I ended up picking up starting my own financial services shop, and I started going around to different conferences on really geared toward marketing. And I met in 2000, I met a college planning guy out of Carlsbad near San Diego, California, and he sort of talked me into joining, you know, into this field, which was even at the time very mom and pop and small. So I started dabbling in college finance, and then later college admissions, then test prep, and then all sorts of other stuff back in 2000.
Okay. So just, it wasn't something you searched out. I just kind of found you as you were navigating through life.
Right. It was not some master plan, but then when I was exposed, because I didn't even know that something like that existed. I wish it did when I was growing up, because then I would have taken on $100,000 worth of debt. but it wasn't a master plan. It just sort of found me because I was putting myself, I guess, in situations to take advantage of opportunities, whether I realized that or not at the time. That's how I look at it now, looking back.
Okay. Well, so, I mean, I know there's just a multitude of things to be thinking about with college planning, but, you know, what are some of the biggest mistakes you see that, you know, parents make time and again when they're doing this process?
Yeah, there's many mistakes. I think the biggest thing is, and this is probably common to, you know, to your field and to virtually anyone in the advice giving business, is that people tend to sort of put things off and stick their head in the sand too long, and assume that the people that they think are going to help them with it are going to such. So in my case, that would be guidance counselors. But the biggest issue is that most guidance counselors won't meet with kids about college until maybe 11th grade. Mm-hmm. And as early as ninth grade, you're starting to create the, actually it might even be earlier, I misspoke, but from ninth grade on, for most kids, you're starting to create a body of work in terms of classes and extracurriculars and all sorts of other things that ultimately will be judged 3.5 years later when they apply to college before their senior year or at the beginning of their senior years. So parents don't, you know, usually plan that far ahead, and kids certainly don't because they're so stuck just getting through each day.
Sure.
And that could mean, you know, that has repercussions on not only your ability to get into a school that you want to go to, but also to pay for it.
Okay. So obviously the biggest thing is just waiting too long.
I think it's sticking your head in the sand or waiting until, quote unquote, you're ready. You know, sometimes I hear that a lot. And I'll say, you know, think of this process, you know, I'm in New York, so think of this process as like a train pulling into Penn Station. It's scheduled to arrive at a certain time. It departs at another scheduled time. And it doesn't care if you're ready or you're not ready. It's just going to happen. Same thing with the college mm-hmm. process. Even if you think you're not ready, it's coming. So you better get on the train, you know, sooner rather than later.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, what things do you see as far as, you know, from the start? I know a lot of, obviously for parents, the biggest issues are what schools to apply to. And then, you know, second, probably even more important, how do they pay for it? But, you know, starting with that first issue, you know, what's the strategic way to look at applying to schools? Because I've seen kids apply to a school because they like the, you know, the dorms or the football team's good or something like that. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But how do you advise clients on that?
Yeah, those are very common strategies, even though they, you know, they may seem a little funny, but those are strategies also, which I think, I don't think that there's anything wrong with liking a school because of its amenities or anything like that. But to make that the sole basis, you know, the football team, the mascot, the hoodies, you know, all that stuff, that's where people run into trouble. So the I think overall there's an undue emphasis both in terms of time and effort and emotional energy on stuff like that, or just in general, the 4 years of college, which are really a small sliver in a young adult's life. It's really, you know, for us, at least the way we do it, and this is much different than guidance counselors and probably anyone I know who's in my field. We look at the strategic way to do this as by thinking about not so much the 4 years, but the 40 plus years. So we have a process that starts kids thinking about and getting objective scientific or quasi-scientific feedback. And we have a career counselor and all that to help them end up backing into a set of schools that are reputable across a cluster of hopefully 4 or 5 different careers and majors that lead to those careers. So we try to backward plan into a set of colleges based on potential careers and majors where they can love what they do and get off mom and dad's payroll. And then we start factoring in not just those majors and careers, but also things like, you know, small, medium, large, East Coast, West Coast, Midwest, football team, et cetera. But so those are all part, you know, but they're not the prevailing, this is where you start, this is where you end type of factors.
Okay. Well then I guess, you know, jump into that second part, and that's probably where, you know, people listening to this podcast are going to be really interested because it's the cost, right? The cost of college is just getting crazy. And from what I've seen in my practice before with people is they try to save something into a 529 plan or something on the side. Usually not nearly enough, of course. And then they just assume that, well, I'm just gonna be writing checks or taking debt out and that's it. And, I mean, what do you kind of say to, clients that are looking at the financial part of it? I mean, how do you approach it for them?
Well, of course the approach varies, you know, as I'm sure it does in your practice. Mm-hmm. So we have some clients who show a very low or even zero or negative income on paper. And we have a fair amount who are deep 6 or 7 figure earning people. So it really, you know, it matters. The approach differs depending mm-hmm. on, you know, depending on them. The 529 in many cases is a great tool. In other cases, it's terrible. You know, we're not like you, we're not financial planners. We don't, you know, we don't offer financial products or anything like that. We're just advice givers, and we do financial aid forms prep, and we help coach mm-hmm. kids through the whole process. Okay. So I'm not conversant on any specific product.
Okay.
But it really does vary. And, you know, in general, you want to save as much as you possibly can. But, you know, most families don't have anywhere near enough saved, you know, to pay for college outright. But that's really not an issue because there's a lot of discounting going on every year. And that the percentage discount that colleges give on average has risen every year for the last 20 or 25 years. As we're having this conversation, early 2019, the average discount off of the, you know, the cost of tuition is 49.6%. Last time I saw, that's almost half off. So that's why we always tell people, you know, paying full price is a choice. It's not an obligation. At any given college, roughly only 25% of families will pay full price, and they're subsidizing the other 75%. So if cost is a big issue and you choose your colleges strategically, because some are a lot more generous than others, and you match your kids up to the type of profile that that particular college is seeking, then you won't have to pay anywhere near sticker price.
Okay. And then how would a parent actually start to look at that? You know, what tools are out there? Obviously going to you is probably the first choice that anybody should take, right? But if they were just wanted to get some general information, like what sites or what references would you recommend them or point them to?
Yeah, I don't know if going to me is the first choice. I'm definitely not right for everyone because of my own personality deficiencies, and we have to be, you know, kind of high end in terms of our fees. So there's a lot of people, you know, we do a lot of free stuff on our Facebook page and on our website and all that. So that's a good way to get free information from us. But also, the College Board site, collegeboard.org, has some, you know, for the most part, accurate information on how generous colleges are in terms of their historical self-reported data, like what percentage of financial need do they meet, what's their average merit scholarship, you know, that type of stuff. So that's a good place to start.
Okay. And then, you know, for parents who are trying to help their children out, I mean, the big stress with all education now is testing. It's even happening, you know, at state levels. You know, parents are seeing their kids are under huge stress for just those tests. And then you talk ACT, SAT. Is the SAT and ACT as critical as most people think it is? It's almost a make or break, or how do you kind of approach setting up a child to be looking good for, you know, a college application?
Well, there's many different components.
Or is it all based on the school? Is it kind of based what the school's looking
that
for?
That too.
Yeah,
there's a lot of moving parts to the whole equation. Some schools emphasize academic stuff more than extracurriculars. Some emphasize the extracurriculars slightly higher than others. So, you know, it depends on, you know, if I advise 50 rising seniors every year, maybe 10 to 15 of them will go to Harvard, Yale, Stanford, Penn, those types of elite schools, and the balance will go anywhere from, you know, community colleges to lesser or still quality schools. But it really depends on everything, you know, that the kid presents. So if you're gunning for the super elite schools, it's one of these things where everything has to be perfect, meaning everything. You know, so those schools will look at your grades, your GPA, your standardized test scores, and your rigor, meaning how many advanced like AP classes or IB classes kids have taken. And that all those three together will comprise maybe 60%, 60 of the whole equation in terms of what admissions officers are looking at. And the other 40% has many different factors. So all in, there's about 20 or 25 factors, including grades and scores. So when people, sometimes they make mistakes by thinking, okay, I have a decent shot at getting into a certain school because my scores are in the range and my grades are in the range. What they're unaware of is that this other 40%, which has some stuff that you can control, like your extracurricular activities and leadership and things like that, as well as a lot of stuff that you cannot control, such as race and ethnicity, and whether your parents, you know, went to that college or not, and whether you're a recruited athlete, which you might be able to control a little bit, that type of stuff, that's all part of the equation too. So just understanding sort of the rules of the game and where you fit in is probably the first step, but that encompasses, you know, 10 to 12 different types of factors.
Wow. So, yeah. So the college is definitely something you have to have a big picture strategic plan to go at. It's definitely changed from, I guess, a little bit from when we probably went to school, but
Yeah, I applied to one school.
Wow. Yeah. Man.
It's different, but I think where the stress comes in is that parents, you know, kids too, but parents in particular, they just don't know what to expect, or they start off with a sort of misguided opinion that, you know, they think if they believe it enough, that means it's going to be true. That, oh, mm-hmm. well, you know, we're going to go look at Harvard, and I'll take a quick glance in case I miss something at the kid's GPA, and I see like she's like got an A minus average and, you know, maybe a 30 on an ACT out of a 36. And I'll say, you know, I'm not saying don't apply there, but understand that you're competing with valedictorians who have perfect scores, and about 500 of those people don't get in every year. So that's part of it too. It's just not knowing where to start and where you fit in. And I have, by the way, I have clients that I have these conversations with who, like us, you know, grew up here and went to college here. And I have many clients, like when I was talking to her yesterday, who grew up in China, and she was saying to me she felt like she was at such a disadvantage because she didn't, you know where to start. And I said, you know what, partially, but in a way you have an advantage because you don't have to unlearn the stuff that, you know, 30 years ago, you know, guys in their 40s and 50s had to learn. So you're kind of a blank slate. So it's not all bad.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, so you mentioned at the very beginning, you really had to start thinking about this at probably ninth grade or maybe even a little bit earlier. But I mean, is there a general timeline for folks that they should, you know, like a checklist for freshman year, for sophomore year, and things that they have to do for junior year? I mean, do you find like people screw up on that end, or? I mean,
I find that a lot of people have regrets. Like they look back in 11th or 12th grade and they'll say something like, oh, I wish my guidance counselor told me to take the AP class instead of, you know, letting my kid take the easier one or something like that. So, you know, the checklist and things to think about certainly vary based on, you know, each kid's goals and, you know, abilities and things like that. You know, the argument for starting early is what I said before, is that, you know, you're creating a body of work that's ultimately going to be judged, you know, 3.5 years later. The argument against that, and I say this to people that I speak to on the phone all the time, I'll say, listen, I know just from feedback, and because I'm a little, you know, arrogant myself, I know that our advice is very good. And every year we have kids who get into all these crazy, you know, schools, and they say, thank you, I couldn't have done it without you, which is debatable at best, but I, of course, you know, accept their compliments.
Sure, sure, makes you feel better.
On the back, right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just as a side note, I always tell kids, I'm like, look, I didn't take your SATs for you. I didn't, you know, we helped you put everything together, but this is all about you. We might be able to help theoretically maybe 10 to 15% extra, is like a little extra edge.
Okay.
But it's not like we can get a kid in. Anyway, what I was saying was, you know, the argument is that the advice would work starting in ninth grade. But the problem is that a lot of kids, most kids, I would say, just aren't ready to take that because it's so abstract and it'd be a waste of money or other resources that parents just are considered throwing at kids to start that early in terms of the, you know, hiring someone to work with them. But it's certainly, mm-hmm. you certainly need to be thinking ahead, you know, regardless of whether you're hiring someone or not, because every decision you make, every inflection point from, and it can be even eighth grade if you're taking advanced classes, from that point forward will have some kind of repercussion when you start applying to college.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. I mean, when you talk to folks, do you kind of pre-qualify them? You ask like, okay, what's your child's GPA? What have they gotten on, you know, some test prep scores? Or, I mean, can you hear from them like instantly and say, look, you got a parent that wants your kid to go to Harvard? In 2 minutes, you could tell there's just no way it's going to happen, and kind of guide them that way. Or at that point, you say, look, this isn't going to happen. Let's try to take a different approach and find a school that's really going to fit for the child.
So I am, I think I'm blunt to a fault. I think I make sure people know even before they even talk to me, because we give our show on Facebook, we have a podcast, we do all sorts of other stuff to sort of tell people ahead of time, this is our approach, which, just if I had to sum it up, and this is going to sound weird, I think, but, you know, even though we have kids that, you know, that get into Ivy League schools every year and that type of thing, I say to them, and I say to people, you know, even after they've heard us, but definitely before, I don't give a you know what where kids go to college. I just want them to be successful, no matter what that means. So to me, it's way less important where you go in that 4 years. It's more important about the 40 plus years. I'm more about the long game than the short game. And in fact, there are very strong arguments for not going to a Harvard or something undergrad, because if you are planning on going to law school, the client I mentioned before, the Chinese one, you know, she's dying for her child to get into, I think it was Yale. And right now, she's not looking like she's going to because of the test scores, and because it's debatable whether, you know, Yale and other elite schools will make it harder for Asian Americans to get in and things like that, which is probably off topic, but that was something we discussed also. And I said, listen, if she's, I said, well, on a scale of 1 to 10, how likely is it that she's, you know, going to go to grad school if you had to guess now? And she said, oh, maybe a 6 or a 7. And I said, well, you know, again, I would never discourage anyone from applying there to a hard school like Yale. But if she wants to go to Yale, you know, law school or something, she's going to probably have a higher GPA coming out of a non-Yale caliber type of school. She's probably going to get money coming out of a non-Yale caliber type school, where she's competing with, you know, kids who are slightly academically, you know, beneath the average kid at Yale. And so you'll save money and you'll have a higher GPA, and both, and of course you have to take the LSAT, but those factors might make it a lot easier for you to get into Yale. And no one asks where you start; they always care about where you finish when you're going, you know, for jobs. So I, you know, that's just one of numerous examples, but I really don't care where kids go to college, which is probably kind of an odd thing for a college guy to say.
But that's an interesting point you bring up. I always talk to clients and other people. Just I bring up Malcolm Gladwell, how he kind of looked at, you know, where people went to school and what kind of success level they had, and he found out if, you know, if you're not going to finish near the top of your class at Harvard or Yale, you're almost better off going to just a regular school and finishing in the top 10%. It ends up carrying longer into, like you said, the long game. The long game's much better if you show employers or grad schools that you're in the top 10 of your class, top 10%. So yeah, maybe sometimes it is better to kind of take a less esteemed college, if you will, and do better there than trying to get into, you know, an Ivy League.
And there's all these other factors. So I'm familiar with the Gladwell thing. There's a famous, at least in my field, study that I know that Gladwell cited, where they tracked kids who, you know, two sets of kids, one who, and they were about, you know, academically equivalent in high school, same grades, same types of scores. In one study, one set of kids went to the Ivy League, and the other set, the other half, got into Ivy but instead didn't go. And they went to, like, a, you know, like a quote unquote regular school, and then after 10 years their earnings were identical. Then the follow-up study was two sets of kids, again academically similar in high school. One set goes to the Ivy, the other set didn't get in to the Ivy, and again same result. And those kind of imply that college is really more about, like, how you see yourself and how competitive you are and what you put into it, not necessarily, you know, what you get out of it. And that being said, I think that's a simplified view. I do see the value of, if you know you want to go into private equity or Wall Street or something, it may make sense to pay up for a school that is, you know, that has connections to Wall Street or to private equity firms. And typically those are Ivies or, you know, big state schools like Michigan or, you know, expensive schools. But if you're undecided, you know, 80% of kids change majors, which is also another issue, which makes college cost a lot more. If you spend an extra couple of years in school, it's 70 grand a pop. But if you're undecided, or if you want to be a teacher, or, you know, something where it's not really a high income type of job, then, you know, I don't get the idea of paying up for, you know, an elite school. But I could see it in some specific narrow circumstances, like, you know, it's going to help you get a good return on your investment.
Do you how do you kind of take an approach to, you know, kids going to community college for a couple of years and then trying to get into you know, a higher end school? I mean, is that happen very often, or is it you kind of frown upon it? I mean, what would you tell a kid that was thinking of doing something like that?
Yeah, I'm neutral, and I don't really frown or encourage it. I just think that it's something. I think everything should be on the table for kids in general. I do see a lot of problems with, you know, and without sounding snobby or anything, I think when you go to a community college, there's really, you know, broadly speaking, there might be two different types of kids, and I may get some heat for this, but there's the.
I get the feeling the heat won't, that won't really bother you, right? You don't mind the heat.
Everyone's got an opinion, right? So, you know, there's the type of kid who's motivated and aspirational, and maybe going to community college to save money and then transfer, which is not always as easy as you think it is to do, but okay. And you also have to deal with, you know, sort of the social aspect of college and maybe entering school, the second college with, you know, after a year or two where a lot of friendships and stuff have already been formed. So that might be, you know, part of a negative to that strategy, but I think it is very powerful in terms of the cost reasons. But then the other type of kid that, and I actually had this discussion with my son, who's, he's at a regular state 4-year college, but we were talking in high school when he was a senior, and I had said to him for probably the 800th time, you know, you're probably the worst walking advertisement for our business that I could have ever had. I'm big on positive reinforcement. Yeah. And I said, so I don't know if you're really the right risk, you know, to send, you know, to a 4-year, you know, regular college. And but then, you know, and he, by the way, he never disagrees with me. He's like, you know, he appreciates it. He's, you know, it's a good, as far as I know, it's a good relationship. But what you know, Pearl, my wife and I were discussing was that the other type of kid that goes to community college are sort of the kids who don't know what the hell else to do with themselves. Mm-hmm. And they're very low achieving, and there's no aspiration, and they're going to drop out anyway. And it, you know, so yeah. We didn't want that to sort of influence his, I don't know, his, you know, by osmosis, drive for success, which, you know, I think is up and down. Yeah, I think it's debatable right now.
Yeah.
So,
you start hanging out with folks there, and if he hangs out with a few people who aren't real motivated, then it could wear off on him a little bit too, you know. So
If you want to get better at a sport, right? Like, you know, so I played, you know, you mentioned this to me before. You know, I played basketball growing up. To get better at a sport, you know, my dad was like, "Listen, you should go. You're in seventh grade. Go play with the ninth graders. Mm-hmm. You know, that'll force you to get better. You'll be forced to step up." So that type of rationale was really what prevented me from probably making a better sort of financial bet on him going mm-hmm. to community college instead. But as it turns out, he went his first year of school at the school he's at right now. He did pretty well. So, you know, he could have done better, but he could have done a lot worse, and we're happy with it.
Okay, good. Well, I really appreciate your time. I don't want to take up too much of your time. And so how would folks, you know, find you out on the internet? Where could they check in with you to get more information?
What is this internet you keep saying? So LockwoodCollegePrep.com is our website.
Okay.
And we do a show on Facebook called College Talk Tuesday, which is on Tuesdays. And yeah, you can just search Lockwood College Prep, and we're all over the place.
Okay, great. I appreciate the time, and if anybody has any questions, they have a ton of information at their site. It's really good stuff, and as you can probably tell, it's going to be humorous and straight to the point with Andy. So thanks a lot, Andy. I appreciate it.
Humorous to me, hopefully to someone else. Thanks for that. I'm my own best audience. Yeah, no, thanks for having me on. This is great. Good luck with the show.
Okay, thanks so much.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. Well, that's it for this episode of the Saving Yourself from Wall Street podcast. I appreciate you stopping in. As always, you can find our podcast, along with other articles and videos, at savingyourselffromwallstreet.com. And now, the lawyers say hi.
Saving Yourself from Wall Street is hosted by Kirk Kinder. Kirk Kinder is the owner of Picket Fence Financial, a fee-only financial planning firm. Picket Fence Financial is regulated by the states of Maryland and Florida in accordance and in compliance with securities laws and regulations. Picket Fence Financial does not render or offer to render personalized financial or tax advice through the Saving Yourself from Wall Street podcast. The information provided is for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial, tax, investment, or legal advice.